Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Election College episode 160, our inauguration extravaganza.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Ben, there are so many stories out there about the inauguration. I know last week we talked about a couple of inaugurations. We had to talk about Andy Jack in 1829, who, well, there was cheese in the carpet. Let's just put
there
it that way.
There was a lot of cheese in the carpet.
And of course, we talked about some of the things about the inauguration. Like, really, the only thing that the Constitution says is, now, since we have the 20th Amendment, it needs to happen on January 20th. And there needs to be some sort of oath of office taken. Other than that, it's basically tradition.
Yeah. So, the U.S. Constitution doesn't really require that a president gets sworn into office in a public setting. But like Jason said, it's kind of precedent. It's tradition. And this makes for some interesting times, because when it's in a public setting, crazy stuff can happen. And anytime you introduce in more people to the mix, it just kind of gets a little bit dramatic, I guess you could say. So we've got some stories and some interesting facts about inaugurations past, and we're going to talk about them.
Yeah. So before any history jerks tell you, you know, the fun facts, like who was the first president to be inaugurated in Washington, and you answer Washington or Adams, and then they look at you with a condescending look, you can tell them Jefferson was the first president to be inaugurated in D.C. You jerk. Mm-hmm. I already knew that.
Yeah.
Quit trying to trip me up.
We just created a whole conversation that will probably never occur.
It may never occur. But it might happen on Twitter, because usually there's somebody out
okay,
there who wants
a valid
to,
point. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
trip all of us up. So TJ had this whole demeanor about him that was so much different than Washington or Adams, because, you know, he was more on the casual side. And the big thing TJ did was he got out of his car. I think he was driving in a Corvette, because he bought American.
Right.
And he steps out of the Corvette, walks down Pennsylvania Avenue, mm-hmm. and the people are like, hey, TJ. He's like, what's up?
Yeah. And then every president after him who doesn't like to walk is like, now I got to do this too.
Yeah.
And so it's a tradition. And that's actually where the whole parade thing came from.
Yeah. So no other president has walked the length.
Right.
All the way from the Capitol to the White House, but except Jimmy Carter. He did, because, you know, he's young.
Well, he's Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Why not?
He could do it at that time.
So let's just go through a couple of different kind of interesting ones. So in 1953, Dwight Eisenhower, our buddy Dwight, he is in the reviewing stand where they, you know, watch the parade behind the White House. And a cowboy rides up to him and lassos him, because why not? He's from Texas. We should be able to lasso him.
Yeah.
That's how we do things here.
I think that cowboy would probably not be around if he did that.
I have a feeling you are correct. I have a feeling he wouldn't have been able to get to him in the first place, but if he had, you know.
I wonder if Ike got a little bit of revenge with that guy. I mean, I'm sure it was all in fun, but
it's probably like his third cousin.
Yeah.
Or something.
But I mean, after reading The President's Club,
mm-hmm.
good book, it brought out a little bit different side to Ike than I would have thought.
Really?
I thought of him more as like, you know, the grandfatherly, happy to see everybody kind of guy. Not necessarily.
That's disappointing and not surprising at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then there is the inauguration of JFK, and he's there on the platform. Cardinal Richard Cushing is giving the invocation, praying for everyone, and well, the podium catches fire, and I imagine there were maybe candles or an electrical fire, but the podium catches fire, and can you imagine during the inauguration of the president, while a cardinal is speaking, you go up in flames.
Yeah. Good thing everybody remembers the, ask not what mm-hmm. you can do for your country.
That's true.
Part of that inauguration, because you don't hear that about that one very often.
Right.
Hey, you want to go back in time a little bit to, what was it? 1865.
Uh-huh.
So, Andrew Johnson,
Yeah.
We didn't really come up with a nickname for him.
I think we'll have one after this episode. I can feel it.
So, as we all remember, Hannibal Hamlin, he was the vice president during Lincoln's first administration, and he is fighting in the war. And he's cooking up some good stuff for the soldiers. And Lincoln's like, you know what? I need to hire a new guy for the job. And he selects none other than Andrew Johnson, who was a Democrat, a Southern Democrat, who was loyal to the Union. And we talked a little bit about that last week with Andy Jack, how long it took for him to get from Tennessee up to Washington. Well, Johnson, he was from East Tennessee, so it didn't take him quite as long. But he's headed to Washington to be inaugurated as vice president. And he gets sick. And, well, he's in the Capitol. He's in the vice president office hanging out with our buddy Hannibal Hamlin.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, Hannibal, I don't feel very good. Can you get me some whiskey? And Hamlin was like, you can't have alcohol here. You know how I feel about that. And so Hamlin's like, well, this is my successor. So I'm going to go get him some good stuff.
Some medicinal whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he brings it in, and Johnson's like, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
And he throws back a few.
I'm going to drink all of it.
So Hamlin's like, uh-oh. Johnson starts to kind of walk a little funny, and Hamlin is having to hold him up as they walk into the Senate chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnson gives this rambling speech inside the Senate chamber. And what had happened was it was cold and nasty outside. So they moved the festivities inside. And in the Senate chamber...
We've been there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the Senate chamber, he gives this speech that doesn't make any sense. And, Lincoln is embarrassed for him and everybody else is embarrassed for him. And thankfully, the weather does clear up later mm-hmm. in the day, so they move the activities outside. But Lincoln is like, hey, guys, we cannot let Johnson speak when we go outside. This was the same day. This was the same day where Lincoln gives that speech about malice towards none and all of that. But the day began with a drunk vice president-elect.
Yeah. And Lincoln defends him later on. He says, hey, not a big deal. He goofed up. He shouldn't have had so much to drink. He was sick, but he's not a drunk. You'll be all right.
He ain't a drunk.
He ain't a drunk. He ain't a drunkard, actually.
He was very drunk.
He was drunk. Drunkard and drunk is different.
Yeah. And then just a little while after that, he became our president.
Yeah.
Like a few months later.
Yep. Whoops. Okay, so fast forward back to 2009, during President Obama's second inauguration, and Chief Justice John Roberts, he's administering the oath of office to President Obama during the public ceremony, and he's going along and he messes up. He puts the word faithfully in the wrong place, and Obama, of course, repeats it, and as, all of us would, most likely, because I don't remember the oath of office. How am I supposed to remember the oath of office?
Exactly. I'm sure probably nervous.
I'm sure I can uphold it, but I don't know if I can remember it. But so everybody's like, well, is he the president? Like, he didn't say the oath of office, but is he the president or not? And so the next day, they actually had a small private ceremony where, just to make sure nobody got the wrong idea or raised any crazy concerns, Obama repeated the oath of office and was sworn in, and they made sure to do it in the right order this time at the White House with nobody watching, but just to make sure.
So, Ben, one of the most tragic inaugural stories, and this is before the inauguration, is, well, the story of Franklin Pierce. For those of you who listened to our episode on the election of 1852, you'll recall the story where the Pierce family, they were traveling by train. This was after the election and before the inauguration, where Mrs. Pierce, she wasn't too excited about Franklin being elected. And they were involved in a tragic accident where the train overturned and it killed his son, Benjamin. And this was 2 months before Inauguration Day. And Mrs. Pierce is just devastated. And Franklin Pierce is convinced that God is punishing him for being elected president. And the Constitution calls for the oath of office to say, "You solemnly swear or affirm." And he chooses to say affirm rather than swear because he believed that God was punishing him. Very sad.
Yeah. And so what's interesting with that too is that Franklin Pierce's vice president was actually sworn in a kind of an interesting way. William Rufus King, Rufus King as we know him, was actually sworn in as vice president while he was in Cuba. And he had gone down to Cuba to be recover or at least feel a little better from his illness. And Congress actually allowed him to be sworn in on foreign soil, which was not typical at all. And he later passes away and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the whole essentially inauguration or swearing in of his vice president was also kind of tragic in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Franklin Pierce. Yeah. Just his whole administration was, I mean, that affected him. And you can understand, you lose your son, you lose your vice president. That's going to have an impact on the way you handle the presidency.
Another kind of tragic one, in a way, Vice President Calvin Coolidge, he was actually visiting his father in Vermont, and he gets the news that President Harding has passed away. And so Coolidge's father is a notary public, so he swears him in as president there in Vermont. So, of course, a very non-traditional swearing in, of course. Once he gets back to Washington, D.C., he does get sworn in, maybe people were worried that it wouldn't be legitimate or something, but he was able to, you know, get sworn in by his father, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you have it. Those are a few of our favorite inauguration stories. We'd love to hear some of your favorite stories from inaugurations past, and let us know by interacting with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. You can find us at Election College.
Yeah, and make sure if you like the show, you go over to iTunes and leave us a review. That really helps us out, makes us feel nice inside too, and helps the show keep going and keep going.
Yeah, we'll see you next time, and enjoy the inauguration weekend.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.